The next week, and then the one after that, follow the same basic pattern. Gerard gets their four-seater and waits for Frank to join him. After they exchange pleasantries, they proceed to lose themselves in whatever distractions they have set up for the morning. Gerard slowly gets used to how much more of Frank's face, and neck, his mind supplies, he can see now that Frank's hair is buzzed, and while he makes it a point to never stare for too long, his eyes are drawn to him, to his eyebrows and tiny ears and the lip ring that he pulls into his mouth when he's thinking hard or focusing on the page. It's not that Gerard doesn't know that he's being kind of creepy, but there's not much that he can do about it at this point. Frank sits across from him every day. It would take more self-control than Gerard possesses to ignore what's right in front of him. Frank goes through books quickly, with a focus that Gerard can't really imagine. He gets a fair amount of work done on the train, but he has to let himself follow whatever path his brain or muse or whatever wants to on any given morning. He can't just do what he tells himself to do. To Gerard's eye, Frank settles in without any effort, his imagination steady and content to be in one world until he finishes it and moves on to the next. Gerard can visualize clearly how he would be on the subway, one hand holding the pole or crossbar with the book braced in the other, letting go momentarily to turn the page, eyes focused and intent. He wonders if Frank reads on the commute back to Jersey, too, or if he's too tired to focus at that point. He imagines him staying up too late, finishing one last chapter, and then turning to the next page, and then the next. He gets a sudden image of Frank as a child, huddled under the covers with a flashlight, mouthing the words to himself as he gets through one of his first chapter books. He's lost in this possible memory when Frank looks up from the book and smiles at him. Gerard startles a little, but manages to smile back. "Have you read this one?" Frank asks, gesturing to his battered copy of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. Gerard shakes his head. "I don't usually have the focus for books. Is it good?" Frank is nodding before he finishes the question.
"Yeah, it's great. I liked Wonder Boys a lot too, but this is his best stuff."
"I saw the Wonder Boys movie," Gerard says.
"The book was better."
"The book is always better, come on," Gerard says. Frank grins wider.
"Which is why you should read it. After you read this one, though."
Gerard sighs dramatically, put upon. "Fine." He's not expecting it when Frank pulls out the dog-eared copy of Adventures 3 days later and tosses it onto the seat next to Gerard.
"There you go."
Gerard picks it up. "Don't you want to keep it?"
"Nah, I have too many books already. Besides, this came last night."
Frank reaches into his bag and pulls out a Kindle.
"I've already downloaded like 50 books for this baby. It's fucking awesome. And like 40 of them were free because they're old as shit."
"Wow," Gerard says, looking it over. "But now I won't know what you're reading." He flushes a little as he plays that back in his head, clenching the seat with his right hand. Frank looks back at him and smiles.
"Don't worry, I'll just tell you."
The train is just about to pull into the tunnel one Friday morning when Frank clears his throat, and when Gerard looks up at him, he says, very clearly,
"See you next Tuesday, okay?"
The gears in Gerard's head turn a little, and when he finally figures out what the fuck Frank is on about, he can't believe it. He hasn't been paying all that much attention to the calendar, it's true, but he still thinks he deserves a little more credit than this.
"Seriously? You're so worried about me that you have to call me a cunt?"
Gerard laughs.
"Listen, the 4th of July isn't like Memorial Day. I mean, it's on the 4th of July, okay?"
he says, crossing his arms over his chest.
"Yeah, and what's today's date?" Frank asks,
pointing at Gerard in triumph when he frowns, thinking,
"See, you don't know. You need someone to say, have a nice weekend, or whatever, to remind you of shit."
"It's not like I only know it's the weekend because you say that. Also, today's July 1st, so there," Gerard says, not caring that he sounds like a 6-year-old.
"Yeah, but it helped when I called you a cunt, don't lie," Frank says.
And the thing is that Gerard thinks he really couldn't lie to Frank, so he changes the subject. "No, but I have plans for Monday, that's the key thing. I'm not going to work on Monday because there are other things I know I'll be doing. Not so much for Memorial Day."
"What are you doing?" Frank asks.
Gerard shrugs. "Heading over to my brother Mikey's place. We'll probably grill something and hang out with his wife and a couple of our friends, maybe find some fireworks, play some video games, go out to a bad summer movie. Classic holiday stuff."
"Sounds pretty fun," Frank says, hands tapping out a bead on the cover of his Kindle.
"Yeah, it should be. They're all pretty great," he says as the train pulls out of the tunnel, slowly chugging its way into the station.
"Well, have a nice 3-day weekend then,"
Frank says, standing up, and Gerard smiles up at him. "See, how hard was that? You didn't even have to say the word Tuesday," he says, laughing a little as Frank flips him off and vaults down the stairs.
"He was looking for an invite," Mikey says.
"No, he wasn't."
"Yes, he was," Mikey says.
"Seriously, I would know, he wasn't."
"I've got to side with Mikey here,"
Ray interrupts, handing Gerard a plate with a well-done hot dog and a bun on it.
What, seriously? Gerard asks. None of you have even met the guy.
He can hear Mikey muttering under his breath that it feels like they have, given how much he talks about Frank, and he nudges the outside of Mikey's foot with his toe.
Gerard!
Ray's got that earnest look on his face, the one that makes Gerard feel like he's about to expound on some scheme to rescue orphan puppies from certain death. And the worst part is that it'll actually be a good plan, so we can't even turn him down.
I know it's scary to ask someone out, try something new, but I never would have gotten to date Krista if I hadn't been willing to take that risk.
He wraps an arm around her waist, pulling her close against his chest. She beams up at him.
And now there's an opportunity for you to do that.
Ray. Gerard holds up his hand. It's not that I don't appreciate that, or that I'm not happy for you. I'm thrilled for you guys, you know that. But this is not that situation. This is not a dude I can just ask out. You just gotta trust me on that. Now, are we gonna eat and make the 305 showing of Transformers, or what?
All I'm saying is that you gotta be willing to go after something big, even when it's risky. Like Michael Bay deciding to make a third Transformers movie even after the second one sucked balls. That took guts, man, Ray says.
I'm not sure that Michael Bay is the best example for your point, dude, Mikey says, and Gerard has to agree.
Well, in that case, you should do it just because I say you should, Ray says,
and that argument's a lot more compelling.
Gerard still knows better, though.
The Wednesday after the 4th of July is the first unbearably hot day of the summer. Gerard wakes up sweating, the air conditioner in his bedroom having given up the ghost last week. He had meant to get a replacement over the weekend, but it hadn't been that hot, and he figured he could survive with just a fan. That was a grave miscalculation. A cool shower and standing in front of the open door to his refrigerator helps temporarily, but the wait for the train is awful. And he forgot to brew a pot of coffee to chill overnight so that he could have iced coffee this morning. Getting on the train uncaffeinated is unthinkable, but each sip makes him feel like he's overheating from the inside out, and he can't bear to smoke and drink hot coffee at the same time in this weather, which means he's just going to get grumpier. The one saving grace is that the double-decker trains have a far better air conditioning system than the old New Jersey Transit trains did, so he'll actually be comfortable on the ride itself. But on a day like today, it will still take a stop or two before his face doesn't feel like it's about to melt off, and his shirt won't completely dry until just before they get to Penn Station, and it's time for him to walk to his office and get it soaked with sweat again. Gerard isn't particularly concerned with his appearance at work. If he doesn't have to meet with clients on any given day, he doesn't really think it matters what he wears to sit behind a drafting table. And luckily for him, the managing partners are willing to indulge him in that. And that goes about double for a day like today, when everyone looks soggy and limp, and the only thing that would make life better would be to stand in front of an air conditioner that's blasting cold air at him. Or maybe float in a pool. Or dunk his head into a bucket of ice water. He pants a little on the train, waiting for his shirt to unstick enough for him to get his materials out of his bag, and he daydreams a little about the only good parts of a day this hot. His favorite is when it's right around 2 a.m., and the world is quiet and still except for the crickets, and the air is a bit muggy but not quite so oppressive. He and Mikey used to drive around for hours on summer nights like that, windows all the way down and music blaring, and then they'd finally pull into a deserted parking lot that was dark enough to avoid attention, and sit on the hood of the car, feet up on the bumpers while they shared a smoke. Or the late afternoon thunderstorms that happen in August, the darkened skies and thick air that tell the world it's coming, it's happening soon. Watching the rain come down through the bay windows of his grandmother's house was almost as good as standing out under the covered porch, ears full of the sound of rain and nose smelling the saturated earth. She tended to be less thrilled with his habit of running out into the storm, screen door flapping behind him as he stood in the backyard, arms open, face to the rain. Mikey would put up a fuss, wouldn't want to join him at first. But once he was soaked, he was happy enough to laugh up at the sky with Gerard, rain getting in his eyes and mouth and sinking into his skin. He breaks free of his memories when Frank sits down across from him, sweaty and pink in the face and yet still so beautiful, eyes bright and mouth quirking into a smile.
"Fucking weather,"
he says.
"Fucking weather,"
Gerard echoes back. That just about sums it up. The announcement comes as the train pulls out of Frank's station.
Due to a disabled train on the track ahead of us, this train will make all local stops between here and Newark Broad Street Station. We apologize for the inconvenience, and thank you for using New Jersey Transit.
Gerard looks at Frank, who grins sharply.
We'll hold them off.
Gerard isn't so sure about that, and if it weren't for this tenuous commuting friendship, he'd be scoping out the rest of the train to see if there's an empty two-seater he could snag. If he were a different sort of person, he could ask Frank if he wanted to join him. Cut their losses and at least just sit together without an Axe body spray dude or cell phone woman to contend with. But he's not,
and it's not worth thinking about. Their defenses stay strong at the next stop, the crowd passing them by in search of less threatening-looking seat companions, and Gerard starts to hope that they can do it, can hold the line together. But at the next stop, a tall, lanky gentleman in a suit pauses by their seat, and in that moment, Gerard knows they've lost this battle. It's not an innocuous pause. It's one with intention. And even Frank can't withstand it as he lowers his feet to the floor. Frank's next move surprises Gerard, though. He stands up and swings around until he's sitting next to Gerard, settling his backpack under the seat. Gerard stares at him as suit dude sits down, laying his computer bag in the seat next to him. A solid defense technique, Gerard notes absently, and trying to arrange his knees so that they don't knock into Frank's. And just as Gerard is getting used to feeling Frank's arm against his, Frank brings his knees to the right of suit dude's so that his legs are right up next to Gerard's. And while in most respects that's far preferable to the alternative, Gerard has no desire to have suit dude's knees next to his, legs tense with the effort of not letting them relax against a stranger's. It makes ignoring Frank's legs and knees and body impossible. And then he feels Frank relax against him, assuming the body language of someone sitting next to a friend, rather than just a stranger allied in the fight against other, less attractive strangers. And his body gives up and reciprocates before Gerard consciously realizes it, letting Frank into his space and encroaching a little himself. Gerard has never had the easiest relationship with his body, but this sort of unilateral action is fucking treason. He searches desperately for something to distract him, something he can focus on intently enough to prevent himself from opening his mouth and saying something like, "Excuse me, Frank, but I couldn't help but notice that you have a body. How about that?" His own body has already demonstrated an unnerving willingness to act without his explicit permission this morning, and he needs a new tactic to counteract such newly developed tendencies. His hands begin moving of their own accord, and he panics before he realizes they're flipping to a new page of a sketchbook. He casts about for an idea before he just starts drawing suit dude, his long limbs folded up to fit in his confined space. Seriously, what the fuck was he thinking joining a four-seater? His receding hairline, the pinch between his eyebrows. He tries not to startle when Frank leans over and rests his cheek against Gerard's upper arm, watching the sketch develop. He gets even more self-conscious about drawing someone who didn't agree to sit for him, or offer up his face for Gerard to turn into lines and slopes and shade, and so he starts changing it, adding long gashes to his face and drool dripping out of his open mouth. Once he's changed the eyes so that they're staring lifelessly off into the distance and added all the detail work to his decomposing skin, he draws a thought bubble above him. "No one told me that being a zombie would be so fucking boring," zombie suit dude thinks, and Gerard almost feels a little sorry for him. Frank snorts against his arm and reaches his hand across the pad, tugging on Gerard's pen until he lets it go. Frank writes something on the bottom left corner and then hands the pen back to Gerard.
"Where are we?"
Gerard can feel his body attempt to freak out, but he marshals it, sketching out a mini Frank and a mini him in the bottom right corner, putting perhaps a bit more space between them than is strictly accurate to life, but it's art, interpretation, and better this variation than the one currently running through his mind. He adds some fangs for himself and makes Frank into a monster, stealing shamelessly from Maurice Sendak's style, and while they may not be cuddling or have their legs pressed up together, he realizes that he's drawn them as a pair, curling towards each other, set apart from zombie suit dude. His body has betrayed him again today. He glances at Frank, who's already looking at him, a small smile curling at the corners of his mouth.
"Is that what you're drawing every day? Monster Franks?"
"What? No!" Gerard protests, but Frank just winks and stands up suddenly, and Gerard looks around and realizes they're already in the tunnel. When the fuck did that happen? And by the time he looks back, Frank is out in the aisle and heading down the stairs. Gerard stares down at his drawing, willing his heart to stop beating quite so loudly. He wants to crumple it up, throw it in zombie suit dude's face, blame him for it all. But he keeps looking at Monster Frank in the corner, and he can't. He is so completely fucked. The third Tuesday in July starts off feeling perfectly normal. It's not so brutally hot anymore, the heat wave of earlier in the month having finally broken, leaving behind sunshine in the high 80s and humidity that just adds a bit of a kick rather than drowning everyone. Gerard knows that a dry heat is supposed to be better, by and large, but he just thinks it's false advertising, allowing the heat and exhaustion and dehydration to sneak up on people. There's no mistaking the energy sap of a hot, humid summer day in North Jersey. He gets on the train like usual, grabs the standard four-seater and takes out his sketchbook. He looks up at the next stop when Frank gets on, and that's when everything gets weird. Frank looks awful, His face is pale and drawn, and when he sits down, his body folds in on itself, tight and compact and agonized. Gerard feels totally cut off, like Frank is doing everything in his power to send out signals to leave him alone. And as much as Gerard wants to ask, wants to put a hand on his knee and swing over and sit next to him, he can't break through that. They're just train friends, after all. So he does the only thing he can do, which is draw. He focuses and concentrates, offering up his deliberate indifference to Frank's state, allowing him to close in on himself and giving him the courtesy of ignoring him completely. Frank doesn't visibly relax, exactly, or seem to grow calmer, but he doesn't get worse, just continues to pour out a constant stream of, "You can't help, so don't bother trying." And while Gerard isn't exactly following orders, he figures Frank should prefer this rebellion to Gerard asking him what's wrong. He finishes the drawing, adding just a touch of shading to his Frank monster, features bold and crisp and clear, the Gerard vampire just off to the side, looking at him. He signs the bottom of the page with a little self-mocking flourish, and stows his pencil back in his bag, looking up and watching Frank from the corner of his eye. Frank's shoulders are hunched up practically to his ears, and his face is tucked up against his right shoulder, angling out towards the aisle. And Gerard takes the chance to tuck the picture into the open flap of Frank's backpack. If Frank sees him do it, he doesn't say anything about it before getting off the train. Gerard watches him go and tries to shake it off before walking down the stairs and onto the platform. The next morning, Frank looks not normal, not exactly. He doesn't usually look sheepish or sort of embarrassed around Gerard the way he does this morning, but he looks better at least.
"Hey," he says, sliding in across from Gerard.
"Hey," Gerard answers, looking over Frank's face and down to his hands, which are loosely clasped together. Gerard wants to ask about yesterday, wants to find out what made Frank look like that so that he can fix it, or help, or something. But he just waits.
"Sorry about yesterday," Frank begins.
Gerard shakes his head. "We all have bad days, okay? You don't need to explain it if you don't want to," he says, somewhat surprised to realize that it's the truth. He really does feel like that.
"Yeah. Basically, parents can suck, that's all. Even 10 years after the divorce is finalized."
Frank looks down at where he's twiddling his thumbs before looking up at Gerard again.
"Not everyone gets drawings of themselves as a monster with a vampire friend when they're having a bad day, though."
Gerard flushes a little but holds his gaze. "Not every bad day needs a monster drawing. Yours did," he says. Frank continues to look at Gerard, expression soft.
"Yeah."
He leans back suddenly, scooting over to his side of the seats to commence the protection of their spots from the oncoming commuters. But then he looks back over at Gerard, smiling, before pulling out his Kindle. And Gerard feels warm and content again. Gerard gets into Penn 3 minutes before the express is scheduled to depart one Thursday evening in early August. He glances up at the schedule board and books it for the gate, narrowly evading the tourists who seem determined to stand precisely in the middle of any common traffic path. Attempting to navigate the city sidewalks at full speed during the summer is treacherous enough, but Gerard's almost gotten clotheslined trying to make a train in the past, and it's not something he's eager to repeat. He clatters down the steps, running towards track 2, and he allows himself to slow down a little when he sees on the track sign that he still has 2 minutes to make it down one more short flight of stairs. He still descends as quickly as he can, rushing to the open door before allowing himself a moment to catch his breath. And then he begins the process of moving back towards the rear of the train. He's never been able to figure out how people end up squished together in the front of the train. He supposes that most people don't want to walk through 5 or 6 or 7 cars to potentially find an empty two-seater when they can just sit down in the nearest seat and avoid putting forth any effort after an entire day at the office. But for Gerard, the mere possibility of having a seat to himself to decompress in is worth it. Worth brushing past hundreds of people and taking up space and being visible. This all comes to a crashing halt when he goes to the upper level of the 3rd or 4th car and sees Frank slumped in the window seat of a two-seater. He looks exhausted, eyes focused out the window in the train yard as they slowly pull out of Penn Station and head for the tunnel. Gerard is surprised to note that he's not employing his usual evasion tactics with his bag and general presence. It looks like that would require too much effort, too much focus on the outside world. Gerard is caught in the sort of dilemma that he truly hates and always avoids if he possibly can. Does he walk past, pretending he doesn't see Frank? Or does he sit down next to him and potentially ruin Frank's solitary commute home? Gerard is already struggling to deal with the reality that he would rather sit with Frank on the commute in every morning than even get a solo seat. Frank's presence focuses him on his work. Or, on mornings when the creative juices aren't close to flowing yet, whether due to a bad night of sleep or coffee that hasn't quite hit his bloodstream, it allows him to not work and not fret about it. Just put it aside for an hour until he gets to his office and his desk and his world.
He's not sure how he would handle it if he sat next to Frank and Frank didn't look happy to see him. Gerard becomes aware of someone standing behind him and realizes that he's blocking the aisle, just like one of those fucking tourists. And it's that indignity that prompts him into action. He will risk just about anything to not be one of those people, on his own train no less, and that includes sliding in next to Frank. The two-seaters on the new trains easily hold two average-sized people without forcing unwanted physical contact, so for two guys who are both on the small side, it's a comfortable fit. Frank still hasn't looked away from the window, and Gerard is uncertain of what to do, whether to just wait for him to inevitably look over and notice him, or if he should say hi, or maybe nudge him. Although that last idea seems bad and wrong and desperate as soon as he thinks it, which means that his body is suddenly dying to twitch and move and generally make a nuisance of itself. Gerard is still in the middle of his internal debate when Frank picks his head up from against the glass and looks over.
"Oh, hi, Gerard,"
he says, and Gerard is relieved to note that he sounds merely tired, rather than soul-weary or crushed or something. Or worse, annoyed that Gerard is in his space. "Hey, Frank, long day?" Frank snorts a little and nods, bringing up a hand to rub over his face. Gerard's eyes are caught by the ink decorating the back of his hand, and he has a momentary flash of what his hands would look like covered in flour as he ices some delicious fucking cupcakes or whatever. He pulls his attention back to Frank when he starts talking again, hands still over his eyes.
"Yeah, a friend's band played at a club last night, and I am fucking wiped today. I was doing all right in the morning, the adrenaline hadn't worn off yet, but by 2, even fucking espresso wasn't cutting it."
He gives Gerard a soft smile.
"I'm too fucking old for this shit."
Gerard refrains from commenting that it's not very nice to complain about being too old when talking with someone who's at least a decade older and far more decrepit. "It was a good show, though?" Frank brightens up at the question, a little bit of energy finding its way back.
"Yeah, they fucking killed. They used to open for my old band back in the day, so it's great to see them really hitting their stride now, you know? The new blood on the scene."
Gerard's brain tries to process this. "When the fuck did you have a band, when you were 13? Frank gives him an odd look.
No, in my late teens and early 20s. Really, almost all of my 20s, since that decade of my life ends in October."
Gerard's brain continues to attempt to reconcile this with the baby-faced cherub next to him, and it continues to utterly fail.
"No fucking way are you almost 30.
Frank laughs, a little more tired than he seemed a minute ago.
"Believe it, man. Here, I'll show you my driver's license."
"How am I supposed to believe it anyway? You already told me that shit lies about your height."
"I think the government is a little more sensitive about things like proof of age than it is about aesthetic qualities."
Frank hands over his ID, and Gerard looks it over, studies it, stares at the DOB printed clear as day in the corner. October 31st, 1981. "Holy shit!" Frank snorts and takes back his license.
"How old did you think I was?"
"Like, 19, maybe 20 or 21 if I was lucky." Gerard's face starts to burn when Frank looks at him after that comment.
"Nope. Been legal for years. It's the haircut, mostly. I know it makes me look like I'm 7, but it's so much fucking easier when I'm working on something to not have to constantly brush back my hair."
"It's not just the haircut, seriously."
Frank glares at him. "Oh, like you're one to talk. You look like jailbait, but you're probably like 40 or some shit."
"I'm 34! Gerard squawks, scowling when Frank giggles.
"Not that you're sensitive about your age or anything."
"I'm not!"
Frank looks at him pointedly, and Gerard sighs, running a hand through his hair and dropping it down into his lap. "No, it's... okay. So when I was in my early 20s, I never thought I'd even make it to 30, okay? My friends were all fucked up, I was dating this dude who messed me up big time. It wasn't Bert's fault, not really. But after we broke up, I just blamed him for all my shit for years. And I didn't really know what I wanted to be when I grew up or whatever, so it didn't even occur to me that I could last this long, you know? And like, that mostly changed when I went to grad school and actually got a job I liked and wanted to do and all that. But sometimes I still can't believe I'm not 23, just trying to figure out how not to die." Frank is quiet, eyes intense on Gerard's face. Gerard can barely tolerate the focus and starts to turn away when Frank holds up a hand.
"I get that. My band pretty much fell apart last fall after being together for like 8 years. Two of the guys wanted out of the music scene altogether, and the one guy who wanted to stick with it is the one who's still fucked up all the time. And, I don't know, it was a great run, but starting over just felt too massive. I mean, the way I saw it, I could be that guy that tries to hang on to his glory days or whatever, or I could try to be the next Dave Grohl and make a new band happen and succeed out of thin air, or I could find something new." He shrugs. "And I've always been good at baking and figuring out how to make something that everyone could eat, and I had some money in the bank, so why not?"
The first time you told me about your baking thing, I thought you were making fun of me, Gerard confesses. Frank blinks.
Why the fuck would I make fun of you about baking?
Just, I thought you were being an asshole punk, saying something ridiculous and then being all, no, really, and convincing me until I believed it, and then you would laugh at me.
Do you have trauma you need to talk to someone about? Because what the fuck, seriously?
Frank says, shoulders relaxed for the first time this train ride, and Gerard feels like he's doing something right.
So he's 29, Mikey says.
29! Can you fucking believe it? Gerard asks. Mikey looks up from the article he's reading on his iPad and blinks.
Given that I've never even met the dude because you refused to ask him out, I can believe that, since I have no idea what he fucking looks like. Aside from the fact that he looks like he's 19, that part you were really focused on, he adds when Gerard tries to interrupt. Which, by the way, is creepy.
I know it's creepy, okay? 19-year-olds are way too fucking young for me, Gerard says.
Lucky for you that he's really 29 then, Mikey says.
Gerard knows what Mikey's saying. He always knows what Mikey's saying. But Mikey's still wrong. Look, just because he isn't actually 19 in reality doesn't really change anything, because he still has the essence of a 19-year-old. If anything, this is worse.
I don't know. You seem pretty drawn to the essence of a 19-year-old then. Also, you're fucking crazy. What the fuck is a 19-year-old essence?
Mikey holds up his hand to stop Gerard.
Aside from being the essence of someone you've been talking about all summer long.
Gerard doesn't say anything in response to that.
Also, and don't take this the wrong way, Mikey says, voice gentle.
And, oh fuck, it's the voice Mikey invented to talk to him about Bert. Apparently, he sounds even worse about this than he thought.
But exactly how old do you think your essence is, anyway? If anyone's robbing the cradle, it's him.
In that case, I should just wait for him to make the first move, then, Gerard says, crossing his arms against his chest and staring down at the floor. He hears Mikey sigh, and then feels him nudge up against his shoulder.
Let me know if you need to borrow a boombox.
Don't be ridiculous, we're not at the say-anything stage yet, Gerard says.
Better off dead, then?
Gerard nods. I'll get the DVD. It's when Frank doesn't show up the following Thursday that Gerard realizes how completely and utterly beyond fucked he is. He waits for Frank to climb up the stairs and take his spot, waits to relax and get a warm buzz from something other than coffee, and when a middle-aged woman wearing slightly too much perfume sits down across from him, he almost stops her, almost says, "I'm sorry, someone's sitting there." But then he looks out the window and realizes that they're already one stop past Frank's and he never got on board. Gerard isn't crazy. He knows that Frank is probably just sick, or away, or dealing with a last-minute emergency, or woke up late and missed the train like Gerard used to do 2 or 3 times a month, but hasn't for a while. He knows that. It doesn't stop Frank's absence from messing up his whole routine, from preventing himself from ever really relaxing, from making the day start on a sour note. He feels like he's walking through molasses all day long, and never shakes the feeling that everything is off, like he never really got started to begin with. It would be easier to dismiss this as being a fluke and nothing worth noting. Maybe he didn't sleep as well as he thought, or ate something weird, or the pull of the moon was unusually strong, whatever. If he didn't turn toward Frank the next morning like a flower seeking the sun, his action involuntary, and immediate, and instantly satisfying. Frank doesn't seem to notice that Gerard is all but begging to have his flower pollinated, petals open wide toward him. He just sits down and smiles at Gerard.
Thank God it's Friday, right?
He asks, shucking off his jacket and throwing it on the seat next to him.
Yep,
Gerard agrees robotically, his body a confusing swirl of emotions as half of him basks in being near Frank again, and the other half shrinks from the realization that he depends upon Frank's presence, relies upon it the way he does on Mikey or Ray, or did on Bert once upon a time. And this is a guy he sees for 49 minutes, 5 days a week, in public, sometimes only sharing 10 or so words in an encounter, and yet he has as much of an impact on his daily mood and productivity and happiness as his brother or best friend or coffee, for fuck's sake. There is no good end to this arrangement for him, or if there is, he can't see it. He shakes himself out of his prolonged moment of self-pity and psychotherapy and tries to smile back at Frank. "Didn't see you on the train yesterday," he says, in what he can only pray is a casual tone.
"Yeah, my stomach was not happy with me. No one would have wanted me around food yesterday, trust me."
Frank says,
"It was really gross."
He sounds almost gleeful about this.
"Like horror movie gross?" Gerard asks.
That's about the scale of it, but I'll spare you the details, unless that's your thing, Frank says, and Gerard laughs in spite of himself.
Not really, no.
Yeah, you don't strike me as being that kind of a guy, Frank says speculatively.
Gerard needs to head this off. Cannot continue down the road of what kind of a guy he is. Hey, I like classic horror movies as much as the next guy. I'm no connoisseur like some people, but me and Mikey used to watch the late-night movies whenever we could get away with it.
Mikey's your little brother, right?
Frank asks, a little wistful.
Yep. What about you? You got any siblings? Gerard asks.
Frank shakes his head.
Just me.
Gerard tries to imagine a childhood without his little brother, and he can't do it. The idea of being an only child baffles him. More than anything else in the world, he's always known that there's someone else in the world who gets him, who gets their family like he does, who grew up learning the world like he did. He looks at Frank and wants to apologize, wants to offer to share Mikey as a sibling, wants him to have that happiness too. Instead, he says, I should probably get some work done. And he pulls out a sketchbook. He can feel Frank's eyes on him as he draws, and he lets himself create. Gerard isn't particularly aware of how quiet Frank's been this morning until they pass through Sea Caucus and Frank clears his throat loudly. He looks up from his sketchbook, his eyes taking a moment to focus and pull back from his work. He notices Frank's leg bouncing up and down, too rapid to be in time to a song coursing through his brain, and then he catches a glimpse of a piece of paper clutched in his left hand. He's about to ask what's up when Frank beats him to it.
So, today's the last day of my internship.
Gerard's heart drops into his stomach. But Frank continues on before he can attempt to pretend to be casual about the news.
And I figured that if there was a risk-free day to ask you out, it would be now, since we won't be train buddies or anything any longer.
He holds out the piece of paper to Gerard, and he takes it, staring down at Frank's name and number written in neat block print. His brain is buzzing, eyes scanning across the numbers over and over, seeing the way the numbers fit Frank so clearly. Of course this is Frank's number. No other number in the world would be right for him. By the time he looks back up, Frank is already standing, turning away, and Gerard realizes that perhaps he hasn't given a particularly clear indication of his mutual interest. Frank. He stops in the aisle and looks back at Gerard, a smile breaking through a little at what he sees in Gerard's face. I'll call you. Gerard doesn't call him. He texts him at 12:17 that afternoon. This follows a harried 20-minute-long conversation with Mikey on his cell phone. Gerard sucks down 3 cigarettes in quick succession, standing precisely 50 feet from the entrance of his building, as mandated by the "No smoking within this arbitrarily set distance from the door, you filthy addicts!" sign that greets him every time he enters it, a cloud of smoke still clinging to his clothes.
Gerard, just call him.
I know, I will. You're sure I shouldn't just text him, though?
Gerard.
He can hear the pinch between Mikey's eyebrows from here.
He gave you his number and told you to call him. He took action.
The unspoken thought, unlike some older brothers I could name, is clear as a bell, dancing on the wind, and Gerard winces.
Call him tomorrow and ask him out for next week sometime. He lives in Jersey. This isn't that hard.
I don't know how to be with him off a train, okay? What if...
Gerard!
Gerard shuts up. He knows that voice. He listens to that voice, respects it, fears it. That's the voice that says Mikey is 2 seconds away from taking his character and leaving the gaming table. And the fact that Gerard's the DM is the reason why.
Just text him if you must, but do something for the love of God, or I'll tell Alicia and she'll get Krista involved and...
Okay, I'll do it. No need to break out the in-laws. Gerard takes a deep breath. Is it okay if I just text him if I promise I'm going to right now? The silence from the other end of the line worries him. Until he hears Mikey's quiet snort. Oh, fuck you, dude.
I hereby give you permission to text him, if you must.
I really must, Gerard agrees, shaking out his hand to prepare. Okay, I gotta get back inside. Thanks, Mikey.
No prob. Tell me how it goes.
Gerard flicks away his last butt and heads back in, mentally preparing himself. Once he gets back to his desk, he holds the phone in one hand and the little piece of paper with Frank's handwriting on it in the other. He taps in the digits carefully, checking them over twice before he starts to enter his message. Hey, Frank, this is Gerard. He stops, unsure of where to go from there.
Does he just launch in? Tell a story? Remind him of what he told Gerard this morning?
In case you've forgotten, you gave me your number this morning and asked me to give you a call if I want to go out with you on a date, which I do, but instead I'm texting you. Hope that works. Even in his head, Gerard can tell that's a terrible start. He thinks for a moment, ponders what Mikey would say, what Mikey would tell him to say, and he takes one last deep breath and taps it in. Are you doing anything for dinner tonight? He hits send before he can backspace it, before he can even double-check it for spelling or some hideously embarrassing autocorrect that would result in him ending up on a website. Although he's pretty sure it would be worth it if Frank still says he's free and would love to have dinner and maybe get naked. While he's still imagining this, his phone buzzes in his hand.
Nothing aside from having it with you.
George stares at the white text bubble, simultaneously thrilled at and envious of how easily Frank seems to be able to just say, well, type, shit like that. But then he realizes he should probably respond. Great. Period or exclamation point. Worry about punctuation later. Want to meet in Penn Station and eat in Jersey, or do you want to stay in the city? Gerard examines this for a moment. If there's something missing, he's not sure what it is. He hits send and gets up from his desk, stretching backwards and desperately trying to convince himself he's not just waiting for... The phone buzzes on his desk and he lunges for it.
Let's do Jersey tonight. I can make the 619, that work for you. We can meet under the main sign.
The one nearer 8th Ave or 7th? Gerard types back. He's not risking any sort of tragic Shakespearean Romeo and Juliet bullshit. Although the invention of cell phones makes that less likely. Also the lack of warring families.
8th. Have a good day, Gerard.
And if 1 2-minute long text conversation and 7.5 hours of daydreaming while trying to appear busy counts as a good day, he does.